morning, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves, December 31st, last day of 2025. Hockey is in full swing. The Olympic rosters are supposed to be announced today or this weekend or who knows, but very, very soon. The World Juniors are in full swing. Canada, USA, Denmark, Latvia, those feisty little Latvians. Everybody's playing great hockey. Fun to watch that. And of course, we got me. I haven't done an episode in a little bit because I got a little sicky poo on Christmas. A little update here. I was, you know, excited. As you all know, I did the TJ Oshie interview last week. TJ's a sweetheart. We had a nice talk for a good hour. The guy's a chatty Cathy. What can I say? But yeah, we were just reminiscing. I think he said he had 4 kids. I have 8 kids. So Christmas is a big deal around our house. And as a parent, you know, it's your responsibility to, you know, try to provide a good Christmas for your children. And I was up until 2 a.m. Christmas morning, just wrapping presents and just kind of getting everything settled in. My wife went to midnight mass, so she came home around like 1:30, and I was just wiped. Because this year, we scaled back a little bit. You know, with 8 children, with having just built the house and all the things moving around in my life, we're like, let's go not so heavy on the gifts. And so instead of getting big, huge gifts, we did a bunch of small gifts. But with small gifts, that takes lots of wrapping. And I was left up to my own devices by my wife to wrap all these damn presents. And it just knocked me out, you guys. So I finished wrapping everything. I had a glass of Bailey's with some ice and I went to bed. I woke up at 4 a.m. and it was just like fire hose. Sprinted to the bathroom and just like destroyed it. And for the first time, I think in my life, I laid in bed all Christmas. I didn't watch the kids open their presents. I didn't go to the family dinner. I didn't do any of that stuff. I was wiped, which kind of stunk because, you know, you like watching the kids walk down the stairs or wherever they're going, seeing the Christmas tree and the lights and the presents, and they get so excited and they're bouncing everywhere. But I was completely just done, absolutely done. And then I had to, you know, get better quickly because we did a trip downstate to see my wife's grandfather, my kid's great-grandfather, and that was fun. And then we get hit with a storm on the way up and everything. And, oh, Not bueno. And you know what else? People keep asking, John, we need a chicken update. And so I have some kind of bitter. No, it's good news, but boy, it could have went sideways fast. When we got back from our trip downstate, we were in Detroit for the night. We went and, you know, saw great-grandpa, spent the night, came back up the next day. The kids went and did the chickens when we got home, and they're like, Dad, there's a chicken out of a coop. Out of the coop. And I'm like, holy crap, like what happened? That's not good. We have one of those automatic doors that opens and closes at a certain time. I program it. It opens up at 8 a.m. It closes at 5 p.m. in the winter just because sunlight, you know, it's cold. We want to keep the door closed as much as possible. One of these poor chickens got locked out. And so the kids got home and this chicken is a literal ice cube in the chicken run. So they grabbed it, wrapped it up in blankets, brought it in the garage, put it in this little wagon we have, put a blanket over it, gave it food, gave it water. And happy news, the chicken survived. It got to spend a couple days in the garage, heated garage by the boiler, by the way, nice and warm, got fresh food, fresh water, crapped all over my good moving blankets, which is always a treat. So I get to throw them out. Because if you've ever been, you know, I've spent a lot of time around feces in my life. Just having with kids and pets and farm animals and stuff. Chicken excrement is the worst of all the animals. You know, we have deer who run around. We got rabbits. We got possums and skunks and all kinds of animals on our property. Bears and whatever. Chicken poop. And kids, listen to this closely. If you want to, you know, I want chickens. I want chicks. I want to raise them. It's the most disgusting poop you've ever seen in your life. It's not solid. It's just this pudding consistency type thing. And they have no rhyme or reason on where they go. If there's a bird right underneath them, they just go on that bird. If they lay an egg and they feel like they got to go, they just drop a deuce right on the egg. So it's just really, really disgusting. Anyways, they use my good moving blankets. can't put them in the washing machine. Not salvageable. So those are going right in the garbage. But anyways, all in all, good news. The chicken survived. The kids are heroes. They think they're superheroes. Fantastic. I'm back in action. The hockey rink is almost up and running. I did the boards. I got the tarp down. But then we had that stupid, like, rain fest last week where it rained for like 4 days. And so the hockey rink filled with rain. And then we got hit with a huge snowstorm 2 days ago. So I've been shoveling that out last night. I'll try to finish it tonight. I promise the kids will be skating by Friday. And it is Wednesday right now. So I have a good 2 days to work on that. So I think we'll be able to achieve those goals. All right, moving on. And one last thing about Christmas. You know, the toys the kids get these days are great, but they're all junk. You know, they break within like a couple weeks, right? So you get all these stupid art project toys, and the little kids get these little movies, and it reads the book to the kid, and there's like a projection screen on the wall, or all these toys. And they all take AA, AAA, you know, D batteries. But the thing that drives me crazy, and correct me if I'm wrong, when I was younger, if I turned a toy off, it was off. And it stayed off until I turned that toy on again. That was across the board. Nowadays, I feel like there's 5 different settings. There's, you know, a setting for when it's on the shelf. Then there's an off, and there's an on, and there's a somewhat on, and there's a maybe it's on, maybe it's off. So I'll be, you know, geared up to go to bed, and it's, or I'm already sleeping. This happened last night. 4 in the morning, I hear hee 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 hee, and it's like a random toy. And then I have to go search through the living room to find this toy because it doesn't go consistently every 10 seconds. It'll go like every 20 minutes. And so you search around, you try to find lights, you're looking for any signs of a toy that's still turned on. You give up, you go back to bed. And then 10, 15 minutes later, it goes, play with me. And you go, what? And you sprint into the living room and you're just tearing through all the toy. Guy, it's the little things. Like whoever these toy makers are, I get what they're doing. They're trying to get the kids to play with the toys maybe. But to have an off button. It's to the point where I have to either throw the toy in the garbage or just take the batteries out. I don't know what else I need to do because it's just maddening. And we have about 20 of these toys throughout the house, whether it's in the kids' room, if they're in the living room now because of the Christmas bonanza, or up in our little school room. I know it's a 1%er problem, and I'm, you know, maybe I should just keep my mouth shut and be grateful for the toys that I have. But boy, oh boy, I hate those toys, those electronic toys. I have a good friend. His family goes only wooden toys. Like, just talk about Little House on the Prairie type stuff. I get it. I 100% get it, because these electric toys, they're fun until it's like 11:30 and you're exhausted and you're trying to go to bed and you say, play with me, play with me. And you're just like, damn it. No. And you're just like staring through the house like a bat out of hell, like a Matthew Nyes when he just says enough is enough. I'm taking this team. And I am the captain of the ship. Just like that movie with Tom Hanks when he says, I am the captain now. This is my ship. Matthew Nyes seized the opportunity last night when the Toronto Maple Leafs played the New Jersey Devils. Talk about that transition. A1 stuff there. But anyways, Austin Matthews, out. Willie Nylander, out. A plethora of other players for the Toronto Maple Leafs, out with injury. They're playing the New Jersey Devils. Jack Hughes back in the lineup. Must need win for both teams, the way the standings sit right now. Toronto, you figure, oh, we're done. You know, it's not going to work out. Well, Matthew Nyes says enough is enough. And he does what a leader does. He seizes the opportunity. He goes out there. He taps the other team's captain on the shin pads. And he goes, you got a problem? Let's do this. And he fights Nico Hirschire. Matthew Nyes is a mountain of a man. Let's not twist anything here. He is a huge dude. If you see him in the NHL interviews, you see him walking around the rink, the guy's built like a brick, you know what house. But he's not a fighter. And mind you, Nico Hirschauer is not a fighter either. But to have the wherewithal, if you're Matthew Nye, is to say, that's it. Let's go, baby. We need a win. We need to spark the boys. He goes out. He fights Hirschauer. It wins the fight. Throws a couple left-handers. No one knew he was a lefty, but drops Hirschauer. And then all of a sudden, the Leafs win 4-0. And it's like, Austin Matthews, who? Who is that? And I've said it all along. They should have kept Mitch Marner. They should have got rid of Willie Nylander, and you should have just rode Matthew Nyes. Matthew Nyes and Mitch Marner, you win a Stanley Cup. Get rid of Nylander, get rid of Austin Matthews, use that money to retool and get some more talent in there. But they didn't. But now you got Matthew Nyes. I just wanted to touch on it because I thought that was fantastic. I love when a young guy seizes the moment, steps up, and does something that a lot of people maybe wouldn't want him to do. And speaking of things that guys don't like people doing, another beautiful situation occurred in Long Island. Well, actually, I think it was in Columbus. Matthew Schaefer, the Calder winner, potential Norris winner, the way he's playing, but hands down Calder Trophy front runner right now for the New York Islanders, was again targeted. He's been targeted throughout this season, obvious reasons. He's a good young defenseman. You want to target those kids. You want to get them off their game. He plays 25, 30 minutes a game. He is a key part of that Islanders team. And if he's a young kid, maybe you think you can throw him off his game by playing physical with him, getting in his grill. The Bruins have tried it. The Red Wings tried it. Now the Columbus Blue Jackets are having their turnout with newly acquired Mason Marchment. Is it Mason Marchment? Islanders two Marchments. Yeah. So anyways, Marchment. He tried all game to get in Schaefer's grill. And finally, Schaefer skating up ice, going a good clip, and Marchment's either coming off the bench or just coming from that direction, trying to cut Matthew Schaefer off. You've all seen the clip, and he sticks his foot out. And listen, I'm all for the physical game. I'm all for Marchment playing his type of game. But what the hell are you, like, what are you thinking in that situation? If you can't catch him, you don't throw a knee, a foot, a leg out to potentially do some serious damage on this kid. Because that's what happens. If you're in full stride and someone bangs you from the side with a knee or a foot, you're going to tear an ACL, an MCL. I don't know. I'm not a doctor here, but that seems to be a common theme when someone sticks a knee out when you're going full speed from the side. You tear something. So Marchment, you know, out to wrestle the biggest jerk award from Nick Cousins and most punchable face, he sticks his foot out and he trips Matthew Schaefer. And right away, there's a response. Pulock tries to fight Marchment, but being a great tough guy that he is, he declines and he continues to skate up the ice. Whistle blows because obviously Marchment's getting a penalty on this. And God bless Matthew Barzal. Matty Barzal sees this. And by the way, this is a Matty Barzal who is the Islanders' top guy. You know, he is their superstar. I know they have other, they got Bo Horvat and they have some other pieces, but Matty Barzal is the guy. When you need a goal, you hope he is the guy who steps up. He makes the most money on the team. He's their guy. He sees Marchment and he makes a beeline right towards him. And it's old school hockey. It's Bobby Clark. He sees Mason Marchment and he knows he's not going to win in a fight. He knows he's not going to win in a face wash competition. He's not going to get close to him because Marchment's going to cross check him in the teeth. So he just baseball swings him right on the laces. You know, no harm, no foul. Marchment, I don't think, is hurt. He's lucky he didn't take it on his ankle. But just a very polarizing situation because there's a clear runway from Barzal to Marchment, and we've all seen it, but it's strange after a play where one of your best players gets clipped in an obvious dirty hit that it's not a scrum right away. You know, there's not four guys attacking him or one guy grabs him and wrestles him to the ice. There's some time for Barzal to analyze what's going on, pull the stick back, and he has time to process the situation, and we have time as fans to just watch it all. Because it's happening in slow motion. You can see Barzal winding up and skating towards Marchment and full-on baseball axe-style swing on the ankle/laces. And then everybody's up in arms. Oh, if this was a Leafs guy, he's going to get five games. If this is this guy. Oh, well, everybody's protecting Schaefer. This has no place in the league. I think all of that is BS. I think this is a great response from Matthew Barzal. I think this is exactly the type of thing that you need to do. And Barzal and Patty Waugh and everybody on the Islanders backed him up after this, which is what you want to say. Barzal, after the situation, says, we know who Schaefer is. He's our guy. He is a stud in this league as it is. He's going to be a superstar in years to come. And he needs to know that we have his back. That's coming from Matty Barzal. And Pat Waugh about the situation says, yeah, I like it. We stick up for our guys. And I liken it to when I have Tage Thompson on the show earlier this season. We talked about, hey, when Stefan Nosen, you know, he hits you with that questionable hit last season and nobody came to your defense. How did that feel? And Tage was very honest. He said, that sucks. Like, that stunk. It stinks the next day when your teammates have to apologize to you for not having a reaction, for not having your back. And that's not what you want. The message, you don't want to send that message to your top player. And Tage Thompson is a grown man. And he told me off air, he's like, I'm going to take care of that this season. Don't worry. And he did. He stepped up and he beat up Stefan Nosen. But for an 18-year-old defenseman, and you know that your team protects you, how good does that have to feel? When you know every time you step foot on that ice, if someone takes liberties with you, you have everybody going after them. It's not just the top guys for the New York Islanders who were going after, or excuse me, let me re-say that. It's not the fourth line guys for the Islanders who are going after the instigators trying to get under Schaefer's skin. It's not the Cizikas. It's not the tough defensemen. It's not Mayfield or these guys. It's not Tony DeLangelo, the nuclear weapon that we know he is. It's everybody. It's Anders Lee. It's Barzal. It's everybody on this team. If they see something happen to this Matthew Schaefer kid, they go and they stick up for him right away. And I love that. I absolutely love that. So kudos to the New York Islanders. I just think it's Matthew Schaefer just became the youngest D-man in history. In history, over 100 years of NHL hockey, the youngest D-man to reach 25 points. Let that sink in. The youngest D-man to reach 25 points in NHL history. That's pretty cool. And I know, you know, he's obviously number one overall pick coming in. He's young, but still, like, there's Rasmus Dahlin. There's other, like, there's really solid young defensemen who have entered this league at his age. He's just having a great season. All right, moving on to the meat of the show. I'm talking about the Sabres and Red Wings. Buffalo and Detroit. My former team, the Buffalo Sabres, love them to death. And the Yizer playing Detroit Red Wings, a team that I've been just so critical of for the last 5 years. I think the mismanagement, the poor trades, the trust in players, the signing of older guys that haven't worked, all of Steve Yzerman's plans I've critiqued. Probably harsher than any other GM I've critiqued in my time being a podcaster, professional podcaster. But looky where we are today. The Detroit Red Wings sit at the top of the Atlantic Division. The Buffalo Sabres have rattled off 9 straight wins, and they are both teetering on the potential of making the playoffs. Both teams, which would be unheard of if you would have said that same thing last year when both teams missed the playoffs, or the year before when both teams missed the playoffs, or 5 years ago when both teams missed the playoffs, or 7 years ago, and on and on and on and on and on. These teams have not been good for a very long time. But something has happened. The Red Wings are playing great hockey. The Buffalo Sabres have caught fire since firing GM Kevin Adams. I know they had won 3 in a row before he got fired, but since then they have just taken their game to an even higher level. And don't look now, but the Sabres are 1 point out of the last wild card spot. When you looked 1 month ago, November 30th, they were dead last in the Eastern Conference. They had lost 8 of their last 10. They were a ship without a rudder. They were a team in turmoil. There was calls to just burn it down, top down, a complete franchise retool. I was in on that bandwagon. I still believe there should be changes, but with the new GM, I like that hire. With Tage Thompson seeming to have wrestled this team out from obscurity, Rasmus Dahlin playing great hockey. I don't know. I think we obviously need to pump the brakes on this, but how real – we'll start with the Buffalo Sabres. How real is this uptick? Because we're looking at a team that has historically failed, historically not drafted very well, historically not traded very well, and now all of a sudden you get on a 9-game win streak and everybody's planning the parade. Paul Bissonnette's got their jersey on. He's dumped the Leafs. He's on the Sabres. All these other pundits are just saying, oh, it's an amazing feat what the Buffalo Sabres are doing. They're so fun to watch. This is, you know, the new GM, Yarmo, has got these guys clicking at all cylinders. They're playing great, great hockey. I agree. They're playing great, great hockey, but I don't want to buy in and drink the Kool-Aid just yet on the Buffalo Sabres, as much as I would love to. Because at my heart, I'm a Sabres guy. If I were to be elected into the Hall of Fame, I would wear a Sabres jersey. That's how close I feel to the Buffalo Sabres. I still do a lot of work with them. I still do a lot of stuff with their alumni. It's a great organization. But we've been down this road before with them. They have played this game with our hearts one too many times over the last 15 years, where they give us these glimpses of greatness. And they let us see the potential. Either it's at the start of the season, where they come out just gangbusters the first quarter of the season, and then they're in first place, and everybody says, okay, here we go. That's it. We've slayed all the demons. This is the new Buffalo Sabres. Or they go on a run at the end of the season, when they're already out of it, because everyone's trying to save their job or get a contract for next season, and then we just start thinking, well, maybe they can carry this over into the next season. And then the next season starts and they're hot garbage again. So I've played this game before with the Buffalo Sabres. And I'm not ready to buy in just yet. Because the last 9 games that the Buffalo Sabres have played, it hasn't been, they haven't had that hard of a schedule. Yes, they played good teams. Because listen, everybody in the Eastern Conference right now is a good team. Everybody's above 500. Everybody's scratching, clawing, and fighting for points because everybody has a chance. Which makes both teams in this situation, the Detroit Red Wings and the Buffalo Sabres, so precarious. Because a bad week or a bad month, and you're literally in last place in the Eastern Conference. But listen to these 9 teams that they played in their 9-game win streak. The first win was great, but you have to put a caveat on it. This is an Edmonton Oilers team that they won in overtime. The goaltender was Stuart Skinner, and there was a ton of controversy surrounding this team. We need to make a change. They were enthralled in a huge losing streak. Something needed to change with Edmonton, and Buffalo caught them during that turmoil, and they win in overtime. Great win. Second game of a back-to-back. They did Calgary Monday, Edmonton on Tuesday. Good win. This is what sparked their win. Then they go out to Vancouver, beat a very bad Vancouver Canucks team 3-2. They're staying on the West Coast. They go to Seattle. They win 3-1. That's a good win. They go home. They get the Flyers and the Islanders. 2 wins there. But again, there's no Stanley Cup contending teams on this winning streak so far. Then they go on the road again. You get the Devils. You get the Senators. 2 wins. 1 in overtime. That's okay. It's still a W. Again, Devils, Jack Hughes had just come back. They were in the midst of trying to figure out who they are. The Ottawa Senators have been very underperforming this season. Nice little break. You get Boston at home. You beat them 4-1. That's a good win. And then you get St. Louis yesterday. You beat them 4-2. A win's a win. I just want to say that outright. What the Sabres are doing is great. They've won 9 in a row. But when you look at the teams that they're beating, there's no Montreal, there's no Tampa Bay, there's no Carolina, there's no Washington, there's no Florida, there's no Detroit, there's no Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, Vegas. Those are the creme de la creme in the NHL. So that's why I'm reserving myself, because the Sabres will now get tested. It starts tonight. They get the Dallas Stars tonight. And we'll see how that goes. Then they roll into the new year. Then you get Anaheim. You get Florida. You get Montreal. You get Minnesota. You get Carolina. You get Montreal. You get some heavy-hitting teams. I'll give them second week of January. January 17th. Let's check back and see how this team is doing. That's another 9 games, I believe. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If they can go 6-3 over their next 9 games, then we'll talk. But if they flounder around and go, you know, 4-4-1 or 3-3-2 or whatever the numbers make up to, 3-3-3 or something like that, then I think I have to pump the brakes and say, you know what, they're progressing, but they're not ready just yet. But they are playing great hockey. And the thing I love about their sudden surge is who's leading the charge. It's my guy Tage. It's double T squared. It's the big unit himself. He's got 12 points in 10 games, 6 goals, 6 assists. He's doing what he does. 2 years ago when he got 47-47 for 94, that's what we expected him. And I don't think he'll reach those numbers again, but this is a great sign. It's Rasmus Dahlin. This guy's a stud. I don't care what you say. The Sabres should sign him for a forever contract. He needs to be the guy. This team needs him desperately to play 28 minutes a game, put up a point, be a stud in the penalty kill, stud in the power play, and he has that capability. Joshua Norris, he's only played 12 games this season coming back from the injury. He's been fantastic. So those three guys, they're the three top guys. They need to produce, and they have been producing. That's why they've been on this tear. And yeah, Jason Zucker's played really, really solid. Ryan McLeod's played good hockey. Alex Tuck has played great. But those three top guys, Thompson, Dahlin, and Norris, this is the reason why that they're succeeding, why they've won 9 in a row, why the ceiling is so high for this team. We haven't seen what Norris can do in a Buffalo Sabres jersey. He's been injured. We don't see the dynamic when you have a solid number two centerman, a fantastic number one centerman. Now we're seeing the results of that. So good on the Buffalo Sabres. Like I said, I'm going to reserve my thoughts on them for another 2 weeks. The competition will get a little bit better. We'll see how good this team really is. All right, moving on. The Yizer plan. You know, I came in here wholeheartedly ready to eat some crow. I wanted to say, I'm sorry. I really am. The Detroit Red Wings are back. You know, I was wrong. And I will say I am wrong a little bit. This team is, they are good. They're better than expected. You know, and it's led by, obviously, it's led by Patty Kane. Patty Kane's playing lights out hockey. He's doing things that, honestly, he shouldn't do. But he's just playing solid, solid NHL hockey, especially in the last month and a half. He's leading this team in points. He's doing everything that they want him to do. Lucas Raymond is a superstar in this league. Alex DeBrincat's putting up great goals. And then Norris, I think front runner at this point right now, Mo Sider, is just... he's that guy. You know, he came out of the gates. He won the Calder. Everybody was excited. Then he had a couple down years where it's like, who is this guy really? And now when you watch him, he does more than a Cale Makar and a Quinn Hughes. Every time he's on the ice, he's laying the lumber. He's a prick to play against. He's a threat offensively. He's solid in his own zone. He does everything in all facets of the game. He kills penalties. He's on the power play. He plays 5-on-5, and he does everything extremely, extremely well. And if you want a solid defenseman to build around, it's Mo Sider. He's like a Chris Pronger because he has that type of mentality. And then, of course, you have the young kids. Emmett Finney is playing great. Simon Edvinson is a beautiful, big horse of a defenseman. You got Sandin Palicka. He's playing great. So all these young guys are really starting to come into their own. And that's what the Detroit Red Wings said for years. Oh, just wait. Just wait. We got this great system coming up. Oh, we're going to take the league by storm. And I scoffed at him. I had the guy from the winged wheel on. I said, I don't know. The odds of all these guys hitting and playing great and making an impact on this team, it's not going to happen. It might be happening. It could be happening. You know, John Gibson's playing really good lately. Cam Talbot's always the ever solid vet alongside John Gibson. That doesn't hurt as well, but goodness gracious, the emergence of Emmett Finney on the first line with Larkin and Raymond, then you can throw out Kane, Kopp, and DeBrincat. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch for this Detroit Red Wings team. Their power play has been great. Top 10 in the whole league, which is needed these days with all the power play and the special teams play such a huge factor. But the reason this team is winning, it's Edvinson and Mo Sider. That's it. Those guys play almost half the game. They play, get the hardest matchups. They're putting up points, and they do it flawlessly. They do it seamlessly. These are big body defensemen. Mo Sider's, I think, 6'5". Simon Edvinson, 6'6", 6'7". If I don't want to misspeak. I know people will correct me, but I think he's 6'6". So these are huge defensemen who aren't just these plodding, big, you know, slow defensemen. These guys get up and down the ice. I know you've seen them. So, yes, I will eat some crow. I have made a mistake. But when I look at the season as a whole, when I look at the standings, the way they're set up, and I said it earlier in the show, one bad week and a half, and the Red Wings go from first place in the Atlantic to out of a wild card spot. They're, and this is how crazy the Eastern Conference is right now. The Florida Panthers right now are the second place in the wild card. They have 45 points. The Red Wings only have 49. So, like, one bad week, you lose three games in a row, and a couple teams get wins, you're out of the playoffs, my friend. Like, that's it. That's how tight things are in the Eastern Conference right now. So I'm not ready to anoint this Detroit Red Wings team. And unfortunately, I could see a situation where, come the trade deadline, the Red Wings are wrestling for a bubble spot, just like they were last year and the year before. And Steve Yzerman is faced with a situation where, what do I do with this team? Because do I think they're Stanley Cup contenders at this point? I don't, unfortunately. And you cannot look at yourself in the face and go, yeah, these guys are Stanley Cup contenders. They're just not. They have a ton of cap space. They have a lot of, you know, moves that they can make. They don't have a lot of money coming off the books next year. But if you're Steve Yzerman at the trade deadline, I think you just hold fast. Like, you have a good young crop of players coming in. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I just see the Red Wings headed in that direction where it's like, you know, they can't maintain this pace. It's going to come down to February and March. And it's like, what do we do with this team? Where do we go from here? Do we just play it out and maybe try to get into the playoffs like the Montreal Canadiens did last year, which was a great thing for them? And the answer to that, I think, is yes. But I'm eating crow, but only a small amount right now. I think the Red Wings are playing great hockey. Some of the young guys have come up and they played great. Patrick Kane has been playing fantastic hockey. Obviously, Lucas Raymond is a superstar in this league. I think once he figures out maybe to shoot a little more, and he's a pass-first guy, I think that'll round out his game really, really nicely, because he does have a decent shot, but gosh, he is just dynamic. He's a solid player to play with. And I'm having a hard time saying they're a good team, but they're making strides. Yes, they're playing great hockey. The power play's been a huge boon for them. But if you're going to, you know, get the crystal ball out and look forward 40 games, I think they're on the outside looking in. I think the Sabres are on the inside looking out. I think the Sabres make the playoffs this year. I think the Red Wings miss the playoffs this year. But they're close. But they're very, very close. All right, that's it for me. I appreciate all the support. We're going into the new year. We'll do a little Olympics update maybe this week. I got a couple interviews coming up. I hope everybody's had a good Christmas. I appreciate all the support. Have a good new year. Be safe. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. And I'll talk to you guys later. Cheers, everybody.